Look, I think it's still very much a work in progress, Tony. I think Steve Hansen pretty accurately described it as the other day, it's by saying that Argentina is going through a process of change currently. And you know, if you look at the style of play traditionally built around a forward pack and a very strong scrum, and then we sort of flipped completely to the other side and playing a running game from every from our own try line to anywhere on the pitch, which was a very high risk game. And now trying to bring some balance back into that game, I think, is what the coaches are trying to do into our game to make it a, you know, more balanced approach to the game as other countries play. So still a work in progress, and we've had some personnel changes through that time, and you know, so I think we've still got to give it some more time.
That's the thing. Do we need to be patient here? Because we want, and we've been talking about this, Greg, a lot with international rugby. We've seen, you know, Australia drop off. Yes, they were competitive in the last couple of test matches to a point. South Africa may be getting themselves back to where we know they can be. But we want Argentina to be strong, but we're not seeing that. I mean, you look through the stats, they've struggled in terms of wins versus losses. The Jaguares had a tough year as well. So what are the major issues still confronting Argentinian rugby?
Well, we're still dealing with the week in, week out rigors of Super Rugby, and obviously in the first year, this has just completed our second season. In the first year, I think we were 13th or 14th. This year, we were 10th. So there's a marginal improvement there, and we weren't too far off the Brumbies, who finished third in terms of points. So look, there's improvement there, but I think that impact and coming to grips with the week in, week out toughness of Super Rugby has also impacted on the international game, and therefore we're trying to find that balance between both teams, and with largely the same group of players. There's only two or three players who play for the Jaguares that don't play for the Pumas or haven't appeared in the Pumas at some time. So that's the challenge in front of us, and I think that's why, as Steve has said, Steve Hansen said, we are working through a period of change and trying to adapt to the toughness of Southern Hemisphere rugby.
Is it also a factor here, Greg? Look at the Sunwolves, for example. We always felt the Sunwolves and Super Rugby would blow up mid-season because of the travel, because they don't have the depth. Is that a similar situation where you guys, and you and I have spoken about this in the past, where the travel factor for you guys is just enormous? There's no getting away from that. By the time they get to the Rugby Championship, are your players spent?
Well, you certainly saw that at the end of last season in a November tour for Argentina. Probably the performance in November tour was one of the worst they've ever had, and that is the players were just out on their feet at the end of the season. So we knew that when we were coming into the competition, into Super Rugby, that would be tough and we'd have to adapt to it. And I think the other thing was Argentina, obviously it's an isolated rugby country. It doesn't have the benefit of five teams in Super Rugby and the coaching input that you get from having coaches that have coached both in New Zealand and overseas and come back and impart their knowledge throughout the sport. We have a big gap, I think, between club rugby, which is really strong, the amateur game, the amateur ethos they hold on to really strongly in Argentina, and then Super Rugby is a massive gap between those two, and now we're finding, you know, another step up, obviously, to the Rugby Championship and playing the best teams in the world.
Greg Peters with us as we look at where Argentina has got to. The other issue for you guys as well is you've still got players based in Europe who are opting, and I understand why, I always do, that you've got players who are getting significant coin for playing in the French competition or the Aviva Premiership in the UK. So let me put this to you. Are you finding some players have come on board, had a crack at Super Rugby in the Jaguares and Argentina, and then sat back and said, in between World Cups, which we're seeing with our young players at Charles Pietau out of New Zealand, saying, actually, my lifestyle playing in an environment in the UK or Europe is a lot easier because the most travel I've got is about an hour, plus the fact I'm earning really, really good coin.
There's only been a couple of examples of that to date. Facundo Issa is probably the most relevant, who is a star player for us in both the Pumas and Jaguares, who's elected to go to Toulon for those reasons. And Axel Mueller, who starred on the Sevens circuit for us, is another young guy who's gone to Toulon. But unfortunately, they don't find it that easy up there. Axel has now been loaned out by Toulon because if you don't perform in five or six games, you're gone in that environment. Whereas we'd like to think, as I'm sure New Zealanders and Australians and South Africans do, that we put a bit more into the development of the player over a period of time. And long term, as a young player, you're probably better to stay where you are and become a very good or great Puma and then look at going at the end of your career. But there's certainly an element of that, Tony. Wouldn't shy away from that. So it is a difficult competition, Super Rugby, to play in when you're isolated like Argentina. And I guess if you're looking at France and living in Paris or Toulon or somewhere like that, is pretty attractive at times. And again, I think the point to make is that we might have 9 or 10 players that have played for the Pumas up in Europe, but probably of those, there's only 3 or 4 that you would really, really want back because of the stage of their careers, not because of who they are, but the stage of their careers back in the Pumas now. So it's not a huge number. Will we see more of them looking to do that? It's a very good question.
Greg, what sort of remuneration do these guys get in Argentina? I mean, are they looked after now that they're a part, as I say, of Super Rugby and the Rugby Championship? Has that changed?
Yeah, it's a very competitive remuneration. That was one of the factors in trying to get the majority of the players back out of Europe, was to make sure that they were competitively remunerated as they would be. Obviously, it's a different kettle of fish living in Paris in terms of expenses than it is living in Buenos Aires. And a component of these guys' salaries is pegged against the US dollar, so that obviously helps with inflation, which is rampant in Argentina at 45% per annum. So there's a few economic factors to be factored into it, but I think generally speaking, is Facundo Issa earning more in Toulon than he was in Argentina? Probably, but it's marginal.
Greg, philosophically, where do you see the world game at the moment? Now, again, this is a debate we've been having over the last couple of years. I know Graham Henry, of course, who worked with you guys for a while, has said to me repeatedly that he believes the world game has some issues because he's worried about where Australia is at, where South Africa is at. We're not meeting England, as far as the All Blacks, until the end of 2018. You're looking across the island nations, and I know you're doing work with Fiji as well. Do we see a problem at the moment with the competitive nature of the world game, i.e. we haven't got enough teams at the moment who are firing shots?
No, well, I think you're starting to see a few Northern Hemisphere teams firing shots, and it will be fascinating when the All Blacks get to meet England next year, and as it was with the Lions series here in New Zealand this year. So, you know, it's cyclical to a certain extent, and Australia will bounce back, I'm convinced of that, and we saw a bit of that in Dunedin. They weren't lying down for anybody, and they should have won that test, probably. And South Africa appears to be correcting some of its problems. I think we're going to see how far they've come in the next couple of weeks when they face Australia this weekend and today and also New Zealand the following weekend. So, you know, I think the world rugby, particularly with the development of Tier 2 nations, is starting to come into its own. Fiji is now ranked, I think, 9th in the world, ahead of Argentina, interestingly. So those sort of signs are pretty good for the game globally. And when you look at sevens and the growth of the sport, growth of the women's game, we're in pretty good heart, I think.
The issue, though, is, Greg, from everything I'm hearing in terms of corporate sales for this rugby championship, the ticket sales tonight, I'm not sure where we're at the latest. I'll find out this afternoon in terms of, is New Plymouth a sellout? We know, for example, North Harbour is struggling to sell out South Africa next weekend, which is just bizarre, even for a smaller stadium here. And I'm wondering whether we've seen rugby overload. But in terms of tonight's game, I just get the feeling that maybe the public wants more out of Argentina. We want to see them. Yeah, you know, I know they pushed us. They did it in Hamilton last year, and then all of a sudden the All Blacks did what they tend to do, which is run away with the game in the last 20 minutes. But I guess the rugby public look at Argentina now and say, yeah, they're going to be strong, but eventually they're going to get run down, and generally it'll be a 20-30 point ball game.
Oh, that's probably a fair assessment. I'm sure our team won't go into the game thinking that, but one of the challenges which New Zealand has developed very well over the last few years is you've got to play an 80-minute game or an 82-minute game sometimes to actually win these games. And Argentinian players need to curb some of the Latin temperament and remain focused for the full 80 minutes of the game, and that's when they'll start seeing the results. And that's part of the input, I think, that we need into our team in Argentina is the sports psych input that has been in around New Zealand, around the All Blacks for many years now, is and has paid dividends. If you look back into, you know, late 90s, it wasn't always the same, and I think Australia probably had a psychological edge over New Zealand teams in those times, but now we've certainly claimed that territory back in New Zealand.
Yes. Greg, let's get on to another one that you're moving into. You've got fingers and pies all over the shop, Greg. I love it. Let's look at the virtual reality advertising, which is something we see a lot in the United States, and I know you're working on that as far as New Zealand is concerned. But look, this is something that I love about sport at the moment. I can't remember a time, Greg, where sport is going through a major transition across the codes in terms of, you know, getting bums on seats. We talk about the experiential, you know, game day time, what it's like for punters. Where do you think, I mean, you're talking about, as I said, virtual reality. Where do you think sport could get to, Greg?
Well, it's a very interesting debate, and it's, you know, it's something that as a, you know, when you look at active people and active New Zealanders in sport, that's what we want. We want kids out running around throwing a rugby ball around and, or football or whatever they're into, getting active and getting healthy, and as we have all grown up in New Zealand doing. The challenge is that, you know, we've got e-games taking over, and I read an article just recently this week actually from Thomas Bach from the Olympics saying basically that they were considering whether they bring e-games into the Olympics in Paris. And, you know, for me that was sort of saying, wow, you know, is that really where we want sport to go? E-games, gold medal in an e-game, and he was saying that there would be no fighting or shooting or anything else, but there could be other games that they might consider bringing into the Olympics one day.
Because, Greg, it's huge, the numbers they're getting, and some of the numbers, and we're talking about this weekend with John McRae, who's bringing an event this weekend to Auckland. Some of the numbers surpass the American Super Bowl, for God's sakes.
It's amazing. And how as a sport, do we keep all the healthy benefits of actually playing sport involved, but also harness the, you know, the future of where sport goes? And virtual reality is just another extension of that, not just the virtual signage or all of that sort of stuff, which is possible now, but projecting into the future, what could be possible around the virtual space where we don't actually need to go to a live sports event. We can watch it in our lounge and get exactly the same experience. I can be sitting next to you, I'm living in Wellington, you're living in Auckland, we can be sitting next to it as if we were at the game together watching a virtual reality experience. Now, people might say that's a bit crazy or off the wall, but, you know, maybe in 10, 15 years that's what we're doing, and it's a whole different world.
So I'm trying to get my head around this because, you know, I'm technologically incompetent. So try and explain to me how that would work.
Well, if you can create a virtual reality bubble where effectively I am getting the same experience in my lounge room that I would be sitting at Westpac Stadium the Yarrow Stadium tonight in New Plymouth.
Yep.
And I'm getting even to the extent maybe that the guy behind me's pouring a bit of beer over me, and I'm not really happy about that, but I'm enjoying the passion that he's bringing to the game. Those are the challenges for sport. If that's possible in a technology way in the future, how are we going to keep people, and how do we harness that so that sport keeps alive in its own way, even though maybe people aren't going to the grounds in the way that they are now?
Because it is happening, Greg. I mean, I can't think of the amount of hours I would have done on the show over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, I'm looking at the NRL at the moment, who are looking potentially to go back to suburban grounds because the players are sick of playing in empty, cavernous, giant ex-Olympic stadiums. And, you know, I just don't know what the solution is, Greg. And, yeah, I hear everyone talk about, you know, the big televisions now. You've got your 40-inch telly and the home experience. But it's more than that at the moment. Everything I'm being told, and there was research that came out last weekend from Western Sydney, which was, you know, the biggest bugbear of sports fans, food. Secondly, was entertainment. And also the lifespan of sports events, as you well know. Look at the Auckland Nines. Was brilliant in year number one, not so great in year number two. Year number three, a bit of a dud. Now it's gone.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, isn't it? And the unique scarcity of sports events seems to be always a success. The, you know, DHL Lions series in New Zealand, massive success. Liverpool playing Sydney FC at ANZ Stadium, always a massive success. But when you come to the week-in, week-out grind of sport, of some sports and over a season, That's when it drops off, and it's not rugby. It's all sports. You know, it's NRL. Crowds are down. I think I read somewhere 18%. NFL to a certain extent, viewership's down as well. And people are consuming, when they're viewing the game, they're not always viewing it like just sitting down in front of a TV and watching it. They're consuming it in so many different ways and how are we going to keep our sort of young teenagers now engaged in the game in 20 years' time?
Yeah, and that's the other thing, Greg. Our young teenagers are now interested in things, as you mentioned, like esports, X Games. Yeah. They're into all this extreme stuff now. They're going onto Red Bull television. I mean, this is just, unfortunately, and it's not, look, I'm just saying, it's the way of the world. I can't ignore that anymore on a show like this.
Yeah, and the attention span of a teenager or a young adult is completely different to when we were young. I'm still trying to educate my 6-year-old to sit down and watch an 80-minute game of rugby, and he's doing pretty well, but it's certainly challenging.
Yeah, what do you mean, Dad? 80 minutes? Seriously, the amount of stuff I could play 18 video games in that time, Dad.
Well, it's hot. It still likes going to the live game, which is good, so I'm going to try and cultivate that. Hot dogs and chips and Coke.
No, Greg. So you can't do that now. That was part of the research as well that was said last weekend, that it's a bad influence, Greg, to be giving your kiddies at sports events pies and chips when you wouldn't buy them pies and chips in everyday life, Greg. There you go.
I know, that's true. I'm a bad father.
You are a bad daddy. You're a bad daddy. All right, buddy. Listen, lovely to catch up with you tonight. I hope Argentina are competitive tonight. I really do. Go well.
Thank you very much.